Hi everyone, and welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host Jennifer Han, and for today's episode, Tim talked to successful author and expat Holly Seddon. They chat about what it's like living in Amsterdam and how the Dutch have reacted to the referendum. She also shares her concerns for the future education of her young family in the more divided Europe and explains why the referendum result means she does not want to return home anytime soon. If you enjoy the show, please do rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice, because that's how people find out about us and it really helps us out. You can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
So, warm Brexit Podcast, welcome to our next guest. She's Holly Seddon, English journalist turned successful author who's now living in Amsterdam. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tim.
So, Holly, I know you lived in around London area for a few years, but you've now actually moved to Amsterdam. So why the switch?
The opportunity came up because my husband's job relocated. He worked for a multinational company and their European headquarters is here. So we were given the opportunity, and it wasn't somewhere that we'd previously had any opinion of, to be honest. Wasn't somewhere on my bucket list to visit or to live in. But we, my main concern was the children, who obviously have a social life at school and in many ways are more connected to the local area they live in than parents. They were up for it. So we came to look around and completely fell in love with the place and moved here in July 2015.
So you're a young British family living abroad. How many children have you got?
Four.
And okay. So what ages are they? They're schooling ages, yeah?
Yeah. So the older three are at school, 15, 14, 8, and then a little toddler who was six months old when we moved here.
Sure. And so you as a writer can really do your job from anywhere. So just trying to paint a picture a little bit for the listeners. So you can understand then what it would be like for a Brit living abroad in the current climate. So what do the Dutch make of Brexit?
In the run-up to the referendum, there was obviously a lot of chatter about it, but it was quite sort of pally and, oh, what do you think will happen? But actually nobody here seemed to think that Vote Leave would win. Based the result, I live in Amsterdam, so I live in the capital city. I live in a very progressive area. I live around, it's a very sort of equivalent to London. So this doesn't necessarily replicate how everybody in the Netherlands would talk about it, but certainly.
Although a little bit more cyclist friendly, perhaps.
Oh, they're cyclist friendly everywhere, believe me. But so afterwards, to be honest, the tone was kind of, they felt sorry. They felt sorry for British people, and everybody that I spoke to was really shocked and asked, how do you feel? How are your family? It was genuine concern, I think, because it's such a, everything's up in the air. It's up in the air for the other EU member states. This is brand new for everybody. It's not just about, obviously, British people, but it's about everybody that's connected currently and somehow have to be unplugged. So really, they're quite curious about what's going to happen and maybe a little bit concerned about what it means for other countries.
Yeah, because it's in our news headlines every day over here. And so, how has it been reported over in Holland?
To be honest with you, because I don't speak Dutch or very, very tiny amounts, I don't read the Dutch press. So I'm quite reliant on, I still use English newspaper websites,
sure.
I still read the BBC. But the way that it's kind of been discussed or I'm aware of it over here is more from people. And there's a big, big expat community in Amsterdam. And the Netherlands itself is a very small country, so everybody's kind of very aware, and we do get these kind of, there are lots of ways of speaking to other English people as well. And it's, generally we're still finding our feet, we're still trying to work out what it actually means for us. And for people like, our family were moved here by a large employer. So there is a certain sense of being looked after, and that whatever happens, you know, we're going to have an employer looking at the ramifications and dealing with any paperwork that might come up. The people that seem more concerned are those who made their own way here. They're the ones that kind of feel potentially out on a limb. People who've settled with partners here, maybe have children who are half Dutch, half British. And those are the people that seem to feel more anxious about it.
Yeah, do you have any real fears that you might have to come back to the UK at some point?
Doesn't make me fear. That's not my fear. That's something I want to do less as a result of Brexit. It's changed my feelings about the country that I left, and that makes me feel very sad. And obviously having family still there, that's an ongoing feeling of unease and yeah, I feel sad mostly about that. What the kind of the medium term impact for us that I'm mostly aware of is actually my teenage children are getting to the age of applying for university soon. And as it currently stands with Britain in the EU, they're EU students, so they could go to university in the Netherlands, but they could go to Germany, anywhere in the EU. And the fees are very, very reasonable compared with UK universities, but also compared with being an international student. And now that's kind of been cut off for them because they won't be EU students, they'll be international students. So to apply for a degree place in the EU will be astronomically expensive in comparison. So that's something that's really pressing down on me, to be honest, because that's really quite close.
Although a lot of the noise is coming out about how long Brexit will take is the whole process could drag on for years and Britain will still be in the European Union during that time. What are the fees out of interest to study at a European university if you're a member of an EU state?
Don't quote me precisely, but around under 2,000 a year, euros.
Okay, and that compares with around sort of £9,000, isn't it?
A year
over here, and I think the cap has been lifted from that, so the potential for it to go up.
Exactly, yeah, in the next couple of years. And I mean, you made a good point about how long it's going to go on for. When it first happened, there was a sense, I certainly felt a sense of panic, like what's happening literally tomorrow? Am I going to be thrown from the country? And actually, it's like a background thing that it feels like it's just going on forever. Just the discussions and the arguments and the raking over everything and trying to work out what's going to happen. And it may well be that my eldest is 15 and young in the year. She'll be applying for university places in about a year's time. We might still be in exactly the same situation we're in now as a country and as a family. Who knows?
Is there any worry that you and your family being used as a sort of pawns in a political process? Certainly been talk from Theresa May in terms of the rights for citizens, European citizens living in Britain, and there's been some talk about British citizens living on the continent as well, and the guarantees that are going to be available for them within the movement of people in a post-Brexit world. But no one's committing to anything at the moment.
Yeah.
So do you have a sense there that you could just be used as a bargaining chip?
A little. But what I feel more is kind of rejected, actually, by the British government. The way that they talk about a mobile people like us felt very kind of scoffing and I felt unwelcome as a British person, but also as somebody who does see themselves as a global citizen or at least a European citizen. I'm sure we will be used as political pawns, but I feel more other people in more dire situations and with more reasonable fears are used more in that way. And think about how the Leave campaign stoked up fears and really manipulated people who do have a lot of challenges and made them feel like this would potentially answer those challenges and make their lives better. I feel far more sorry for them than us. We live in quite a quite a kind of comfortable bubble here right now, to be honest with you.
In terms of, I know you said you didn't speak Dutch, but in terms of the political landscape in Holland at the moment, have you been able to get a handle on that at all? And has it become more hostile in recent months?
Yeah, the temperatures have risen a little. When we first moved, and it is a progressive liberal country, and it's got quite a complex government with lots and lots of different parties making it up. So it's not the kind of the two-party system that we've got in the UK. And that, in a way, makes you feel a little bit protected, like nothing too extreme can happen because there's so many different, you know...
Does that also mean that nothing ever gets done?
Funnily enough, I'd say it's an incredibly efficient country where a lot of stuff gets done, but we pay quite high taxes for that, so it swings around. But I definitely noticed that there are certain people who are on the fringes. We've got an equivalent of a Nigel character, shall we say, Wilders or Wilders, and he seems to be getting more airtime. He seems to be getting quoted more. And I don't think it's because people necessarily hear... as fans of his, I think actually it's that with Brexit, with Trump, people are looking around like, okay, what's on the horizon? Like, who haven't we paid attention to that's a menace or that's going to change stuff? Or whichever way politically you feel, who's going to be the next person to watch, who's going to surprise everybody, for good or for bad? So I definitely noticed him getting more. And that concerns me because that legitimizes what's being said, and what's said is often a load of bunkum, especially in his case. He's talked about, you know, all the same hot button issues that Farage and that, you know, wanged on about during the Leave campaign that turned out not to be true. But you don't know, you know, it worked, didn't it? But here we're very, very reliant on the EU. You know, we're part of the Holland or the Netherlands, part of the land, it's locked, it's in, it's connected with rail networks that run across different countries. It's a lot more connected. It would be in many ways worse for this country to leave, but it doesn't stop people saying it.
I see, yeah. So this, we sort of touched on it there really with a perceived problem of immigration, real or perceived, however you want to look at these things. In terms of where Holland are at the moment, is there a perceived immigration problem?
I think every country that's had any kind of difficulties or in any way doesn't have the money that they want or the lifestyle that they want or the crime figures that they want, look to what could be changed or what might be the reason. So, yeah, people talk about immigration. There was certainly some concern from some quarters about refugees, but actually, there has been, in my experience and the circles I move in and the people I talk to and the things I see, actually, it's been very welcoming and there are refugees in the country. And this sounds like such a kind of a mum anecdote, but I went to have my hair done the other day. And the guy doing my hair is lovely. And we got talking about refugees. And he actually said that he got quite choked up when he was saying it in a way that maybe this is unfair, but I don't imagine a British man of that situation behaving. But he said, he got quite choked up and he said, I don't know how to go about it, but I want to speak to the refugee centre and find out if there are any hairdressers who've come over so that I could give one of them a job. And that really, the people that you actually speak to, that seems to be more their approach. And actually, the Dutch are they're very straightforward, often blunt, but they're very pragmatic and they just get stuff done. And that's kind of the sense that I get from them.
Do you have much of a problem with homelessness over in Holland?
You don't see it in the way that you visibly see people sleeping on the streets in London. I haven't seen it in my part of Amsterdam. I haven't explored the wider country that much, but I am aware of the equivalent of the Salvation Army places, and I do there are definitely places for people in hostels to go to, but I don't, it's certainly not such a visible problem. You don't see people really, really on the absolute. I mean, when you walk around London and you see people in freezing, freezing conditions, and all they've got between them and the pavement is cardboard. I've not seen that here at all.
Yeah, there has certainly been some reports of homelessness on the increase a lot this year. And then that's coincided with the shortage in housing supply as well, which is really becoming an issue to the fore. I just wondered what the situation was like over there.
It's, like I say, it's not something visible. But then if you've got people coming who are, you know, people coming who are in desperate need, they're coming to a country, whether it's Holland or the UK, and they're given emergency help, well, when that help runs out, where do they go? You know, who's making up these homeless numbers? I don't mean fabricating, I mean literally which people are in this group. Is it people who came over and were given short-term help and then were turfed out, or there was no more space? You know, what's the long-term help for these people who've been through something we can't even imagine? I mean, we have no frame of reference whatsoever. And they've come over to a completely different place, a completely different climate, completely different setup, and they don't necessarily know the language, and they certainly don't know how to deal with all the forms and bureaucracy, because people who were born in a country and grew up there and get to 30-odd, like me, still struggle with the forms and the bureaucracy. So, you know, I really, really worry about that, and it doesn't surprise me at all if there is an upswing in people who have kind of dropped out of the system. They're the people who need help the most.
Now, you said there's quite a big expat community over there. Does that mean you get a lot of imports, British products?
Yeah. So this is definitely a downside to the whole Brexit thing. Marks and Spencer's is closing in Amsterdam. We have one Marks and Spencer's in Amsterdam and another one in The Hague. And there was quite a ripple of unrest when the news was announced that they were pulling the shops and leaving the country. So, yeah, we do currently have our Marks and Spencer's, our little piece of home, but
okay.
not for long.
And just, are there any other products that are really British imports that the Dutch people can't do without?
No. I don't think the Dutch particularly care for British food any more than British people particularly care for Dutch food. They have tea, but it's not. I'm really sorry to any Dutch listeners. It is not British tea. It's not good. So other than that, I can't really think of anything that they particularly... and it's called English breakfast, but I'm telling you, it's not English breakfast. but other than that, I can't think of anything really.
Okay. So when we do eventually leave the European Union and there's a big tariff put on all our products, then, and we're outside the single market, then the Dutch aren't going to feel too hard done by.
I don't think so. Unless there's something I'm really missing, I don't think so. But then it's only an hour's flight, so I'm sure somebody could go and fill up a suitcase and have a nice little flight business bringing stuff in.
Now, look, you are a best-selling author, and your debut novel, Try Not to Breathe, that's the title, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I just had a quick look, and that's been out almost a year now, so time's flown. Congratulations on that. Sales still going well for it?
Yes, and I've got the new one coming out in July, which is called Don't Close Your Eyes, and that's just gone up for pre-order, actually, if I can plug it.
Get the plug in.
Yeah.
We don't stretch the guest fees at this point, so we have to give the guests a chance to plug their own stuff. So has all this talk of politics and Brexit, has that given you a little bit of inspiration for future books?
It's had the opposite effect. I think I've actually started avoiding reading the news. I feel there are certain topics that it feels, I can never do anything about them, and I feel almost mawkish reading about them. There's so much uncertainty, and there's so much at the moment that just plain terrifies me. America, the situation that they're facing terrifies me, and the people that have been given a platform terrified me. And actually, it makes me run from that. And more and more, I'm writing. So something that I'm writing at the moment, which is probably going to be book four so we're quite far ahead. It wow. has no politics. It has nothing, okay. nothing like that at all. And actually, any kind of dark elements there, they're completely within the person and within the home, because I just don't want to look at that stuff right now.
So, you know, from a psychological standpoint, it's quite interesting that you can use your writing as escapism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, total escape. While I'm writing it, it's total escapism. And then when it gets close to other people reading it, and it's complete panic and, oh my God, you know, they're going to read my thoughts and they're going to think I'm nuts. But right now, it's nice.
Okay. Oh, it's good. And you don't, and you find that you can, with a young family and, you know, a working husband, you find that you can still fit in time to write and be prolific.
Yeah. Well, I'm lucky because I've got the three children who are at school, and then it's actually only got during the day one little one with me, and he's just started going to daycare a few mornings a week. And the thing is that I wrote Try Not to Breathe while I was writing full time. I was doing a university degree and I had the three children, but they were younger, and I kind of made that work. So actually it feels really, I'm not going to say easy, but easier now. And it's a really nice place to write, and I'm really lucky that I can do that full time and not have to go to an office and not have to try to learn Dutch so I can get a job in a Dutch office. And yeah, I've actually got some freedom to do it.
Would that be your top tip for somebody who is quite fearful or terrified about the future of the world, to immerse themselves in something they enjoy?
Absolutely. I think, yeah, anybody who's concerned with anything that they can't do anything about, it's really important to find something that they can do something about, that they can feel good about, that they can feel some kind of control over. That's my tip anyway.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.